Chet Huntley, NBC News, New York.
And David Brinkley, NBC News, Washington. Defense Secretary Laird says American troops will be withdrawn from Vietnam somewhat faster than President Nixon promised. He didn't say how many or how fast, but he said the figures and the dates given by the president in his last speech will be surpassed. That is, more than 50,000 will be brought home by October 15th, and more than 150,000 by next spring. Again, he didn't say exactly how many or exactly how soon.
Our troop strength in Vietnam is down today to approximately 410,000. This is the lowest level of American troop presence in Vietnam since February of 1967. We will meet the president's announced troop ceiling of 384,000 on October 15th. We will not only meet it, we will beat it. And when we reach that troop ceiling and go below that troop ceiling on the 15th of October, we will be at a point where we have fewer troops in South Vietnam than we've had there since 1966.
Major General George Casey, the commander of the U.S. 1st Air Cavalry Division, flew out in a helicopter in Vietnam on Tuesday, carrying six others with him. They did not return. Today, they spotted from the air the wreckage of the general's helicopter crashed on a mountainside. There was no sign of life, and it appeared there were no survivors. Last week's casualty figures were announced today. 61 Americans killed. That was the lowest figure in over 3 years. The U.S. military said the American losses were down because the South Vietnamese were taking over more of the fighting. Chet?
There was little fighting today in Indochina, in Laos, South Vietnam, or Cambodia. But the commander of the Cambodian Air Force reported that 35,000 of the 60,000 enemy soldiers in the country had pulled back. He did not say how far or exactly where, in the face of recent heavy American air raids and the general counteroffensive on the ground. As a result, large numbers of Cambodian civilians were said to be returning to their homes in the area between the capital, Phnom Penh, and the South Vietnamese border. At the same time, many South Vietnamese refugees were making their way back to their country.
For more than 1,000 Vietnamese, this was their last day in Cambodia. Buses brought them to a wharf in Phnom Penh for shipment back to Vietnam. The Cambodian government supplied a loaf of bread for each man, woman, and child, but not much else. The bread would be enough for lunch and dinner. There might or might not be a fresh supply somewhere along the way. The refugees boarded three small river steamers for a trip to Nayak Leung, Cambodia, about 40 miles away. Somewhere along the river, they passed seven vessels bringing home Cambodian refugees, traveling from northeastern Cambodia by way of South Vietnam. This was the last leg of a long journey. Just as the Vietnamese have been driven out of their homes by Cambodians, these Cambodians have been driven out of their homes by Vietnamese, North Vietnamese and Viet Cong soldiers. For them, there was a welcome. Soldiers and workers for the Cambodian Refugee Commission, also dressed in military uniforms, helped unload the ship. Being the wives of soldiers, most of the women were young, and the children were small. Some had already lost husbands and fathers. Here, at least, they would have solid roofs overhead for the coming rainy season. They would have lights, sanitation, fresh water for laundry. Both the Cambodians and the Vietnamese had returned home, but home to a refugee is only the place where they take you in when you have nowhere else to go. Richard Hunt, NBC News, Phnom Penh.
NBC News will present an hour-long special, Cambodia, Right or Wrong, at 7:30 tonight, Eastern Time. Today's session of the Paris Peace Talks was the customary exercise in futility. The other side denounced President Nixon's policies in Southeast Asia. The Americans and South Vietnamese urged the enemy to open genuine negotiations, and there the matter lay. Nothing is expected to happen, at least until David Bruce takes over for Philip Habib as leader of the American negotiating team.
It's assumed that David Bruce will bring with him to Paris some new proposals, that the Nixon administration is now willing to bend a little to communist demands in hopes of getting these talks moving. There have been rumors to this effect, and the best reason to believe them is the fact that Bruce is coming here at all. People who know him say that he wouldn't have taken the job if he didn't have something new to offer that he thought might break the deadlock here. There have been hints and trial balloons that one new offer would be to accept a temporary coalition government in South Vietnam, one based on the relative strengths of the two sides. This government would then conduct elections for a permanent coalition government. It's an idea that the communists have insisted upon, and it would be an important American concession. But nobody knows whether the North Vietnamese are interested in negotiating at this time, whether they will be willing to budge a little on their main demands. Up to now, there's been no sign of that. But next month will mean a new start, and after 18 months of frustration, there's some reason for hope in that fact. David Burrington, NBC News, Paris.
The Huntley Brinkley Report is produced by NBC News and brought to you in color by Tarleton with the activated charcoal filter. Put Tarleton's charcoal filter on your cigarette, and you'd have a better tasting cigarette.
If you could put Tarleton's charcoal filter on your cigarette, well, if you could put Tarleton's charcoal filter on your cigarette, you'd have a better tasting cigarette. Of course, we can't guarantee it'd smoke as smooth as a Tarleton. Face it, if you want your cigarette to smoke as smooth as a Tarleton, it'll just have to be a Tarleton with the activated charcoal filter. That's why us Tarleton smokers would rather fight than switch.
The Senate argued for more than 7 weeks about the Cooper Church Amendment, saying that all American military had to be out of Cambodia by June 30th. Finally, they passed it, but by the time they did, the American troops were already out. After 7 weeks of debate in the Senate, the amendment then went over to the House, where today they disposed of it in 10 minutes, voting it down. Tonight, the president invited some of the leaders down to the White House to thank them.
A number of well-known doves, congressmen, former government officials, professors, gathered in a Senate office building for what they called a conference on a feasible timetable for getting out of Vietnam. They all seemed to be agreed on some sort of timetable, 12 months, 18 months, but retired Marine General David Shoup said that the logistics of withdrawal would not be easy.
If we withdraw our combat forces, all of them, are we going to bring all their equipment and 30-day supply out of the depots? Someplace there must be a decision. What is the level of supplies and the type of the literally thousands and thousands of items of equipment that are in the warehouses and in the depots in South Vietnam? If that's decided to take all of that out, with respect to withdrawal, that's a tremendous task, and the Vietnamese will not be able to fight much longer. I only bring these points out to show that until you decided what were you going to leave there, you can't begin to make plans for withdrawal on a timetable basis.
There was a lot of familiar talk here today about the war, much of it critical, not much of it new. So what today really amounted to was another escalation in the summer offensive by the doves to get public support for pulling all Americans out of Vietnam by this time next year. Charles Quinn, NBC News, Washington.
The federal government began today what could be its final campaign to force the integration of schools in several southern states. It filed lawsuits against schools in Mississippi, Arkansas, Florida, and South Carolina. Chet?
For weeks, there have been rumors that James Farmer, Assistant Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, and a black, would resign, that he had hoped to work within the Nixon administration to improve the conditions of blacks, but that he had found he couldn't. Today, Farmer talked to NBC News correspondent Ron Nesson about that and about a possible resignation.
I have not been asked to resign. I have no resignation in process or in my typewriter. I am here at HEW, and my current plans are to remain here.
Would you assess the state of the two societies in America?
I think the split has widened. The polarization is greater than it ever has been before. There are two hostile camps, black and the white, with less communication than we've had in any period in the nation's history. We've got to halt that. We've got to reverse it.
Is this going to lead to some sort of violence between the races?
Well, no, I never predict violence and riots because such predictions can so easily become self-fulfilling prophecies. What I do is to indicate that the ingredients for conflict are still present in American cities and the total society. One of the things is for all of us to exercise restraint. That means whites, it means blacks, it means policemen, and it means civilians. All of us must stop being trigger happy and become slow on the trigger and slow on the billy clubs. We must count to 10 before reacting to avoid that one triggering incident that can set off a conflagration. I think that this is a time in the nation's history when one has to be careful about the words that he uses, is to be careful about his rhetoric and about the invective, because such invective, whether it comes from people outside the government or people inside the government, may indeed further the polarization in American society.
What would the president have to do, specifically the president?
Well, one thing that the president should do, in my opinion, and I know for a fact that the president is considering doing that, and that is to speak out, and to speak out boldly, to talk to the nation about getting together. I, for example, do not go along with the theory that words are unimportant and you should merely watch our deeds. Words give hope. Words voice aspirations of people. So words sometimes are just as important as deeds. They must be backed up by deeds, but people have got to hear brave, courageous, hopeful words.
I'm going to take a shower now without soap, and I bet I'll be cleaner than you.
I use something that makes me feel cleaner than soap. Zest. Deodorant Zest. It's not a soap, it's different. Look, Zest makes twice the lather. Deodorant lather. It's packed with active deodorant. And watch this. Soap leaves a soap film that sticks to your skin. Not Zest. That's why Zest leaves you feeling cleaner than soap.
Hey, Ralph's got rabies. That's not rabies. It's Pearl Concentrate.
You're sure gonna catch it. Reason up all your mom's shampoo.
Just used a little. Catch.
Hey! Anyhow, Pearl Concentrate's not for dogs.
It is too. My dad uses it. Mom uses it. If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for Ralph.
My Pearl young man, if Ralph is through.
Pearl Concentrate for your loved one.
The Russians published today what they said was their plan for peace in the Middle East, a settlement by stages, they called it. First, both sides, Israel and the Arab states, would agree to abide by the UN ceasefire resolution of 1967. Both would agree to hold no territory taken in war. After that, Israeli troops would withdraw and the war formally declared by both sides to be ended. The UN Security Council would guarantee Israel's frontiers. There would be demilitarized zones on the frontiers with UN troops stationed in them. Israel would accept the UN resolution on refugees, and the Suez Canal would be reopened, available to all countries. That, said the Soviet Union in a magazine it publishes, is the Soviet plan. Clear, it said, to the point, and nothing secret about it.
We are concerned about the activities of the Soviet Union as far as the Middle East is concerned. They have gone forward with the shipment and the deployment of new anti-aircraft missiles, not only SS the SAM-2s, but also the 3s. This is currently under evaluation here in the Department of Defense as well as in the State Department and the National Security Council. We had hoped that this would not be the response to our overtures, which we have made, but we are going to maintain a proper strategic and military balance in the area. And we have given those assurances, and we will continue to deliver on those assurances. We have no plans as far as United States military forces are concerned. Our troops, under present planning, will not be used.
What Secretary Laird did not say is how the United States is going to maintain a military balance in the Mideast. He ruled out the use of troops. The expectation is that more American jets will be sold to the Israelis. But many wonder if that will be enough to counter the Soviet presence. Further, the steps that might be taken are affected by the shifting balance of naval power in the eastern Mediterranean. The Soviet fleet now serves as a protective shield for the Arabs and as a blocking force against anyone who might intervene on the side of Israel. The U.S. Sixth Fleet, which once had the Mediterranean all to itself, no longer operates as it wishes. Soviet naval strength there almost matches that of the U.S., and American ships have all but ceded a large area of the eastern Mediterranean to the Soviets. Keeping the Russians out was one of the reasons they were sent there in the first place. All this could be the possible confrontation that President Nixon feared might develop. Robert Gorelsky, NBC News in Washington.
Joseph Sisko, Assistant Secretary of State, has been flying around the Middle East for weeks, talking to one side and then the other, trying to get some agreement on something. He's still trying. Today, Israeli Ambassador Rabin went to the State Department for a talk with him. Chet?
The revelation that some political prisoners on the South Vietnamese island of Con Son are being held in crowded, windowless concrete pits called tiger cages prompted the government of that country today to issue a statement. It admitted that what it called communist criminals were indeed being held in tiger cages, but that the International Red Cross had looked them over and decided they weren't so bad. Yesterday, South Vietnam started 86 sick or wounded North Vietnamese prisoners of war on the way home. The other side had agreed last week to take them back if certain conditions were observed.
Most of the 86 North Vietnamese prisoners of war and fishermen have been in captivity since 1965. They were kept at a POW camp in Ben Hoa. A month ago, they were moved to this government training center just outside Saigon. Without exception, all said they still wanted to go back to North Vietnam. They are the sixth group to be released by the South Vietnamese government. 62 of the prisoners are disabled, and the South Vietnamese government said they would be released for humanitarian reasons. Before departing for the North, the prisoners were given a rare but a brief farewell ceremony. They were informed they were being officially released by South Vietnamese General Tran Van Trung of the government's political warfare section. Despite their war wounds, most appeared healthy as they boarded a South Vietnamese naval vessel. They were to be taken 1 mile inside North Vietnamese waters and released 12 miles offshore in three motorboats. Two International Red Cross officials were scheduled to accompany them ashore, but Hanoi rejected this plan. In any event, the men have been trained to operate their boats and will be given food and water upon release. Jim Bennett, NBC News, Saigon.
This little power mower has a mighty big name, a great $105 value, but right now, it's free with the purchase of any new John Deere lawn and garden tractor during our independent special on John Deere Weekend Freedom Machines. Buy our lawn and garden tractor for your big jobs, and we'll give you this big helper for your little jobs. Then, with dozens of optional attachments available, you can turn your weekend hang-ups into an easy weekday evening joyride. So declare your independence from weekend lawn chores. Buy your John Deere lawn and garden tractor, the Weekend Freedom Machine, and get your free trimming mower from your participating John Deere dealer.
The Hutley Brinkley Report continues, brought to you by
Anacin Tablets. Anacin relieves headache pain and so relaxes its tension. Anacin.
You're working against time. Pressure builds. Headache starts. Pain. It's tension. That's why there's Anacin tablets. Anacin relieves headache pain and its tension. Of all the leading tablets, Anacin has more of the one strong pain reliever doctors specify most. When pain goes, you can relax. Anacin relieves headache pain and its tension.
The Southern Regional Council reported today that the Internal Revenue Service had sent agents around to libraries to check on what people were reading, what books on explosives, how to get them, how to make them, how to use them. And the council said some librarians had resisted the agents. The IRS admitted it had done some snooping in the Milwaukee, Atlanta, and San Francisco areas, but that it was only after specific suspects, and besides, it said it had stopped doing it. In Chicago, the executive director of the American Library Association denounced the practice.
What has gone on is an invasion of privacy. Now, the attitude of the entire association is a difficult thing to determine because it's a large association. But I think that generally that would be the feeling of our officers and of our boards and of our committees that might be concerned with the problem.
What do you consider it an invasion of privacy?
Well, if a law enforcement agency can go into a library and find out what books you have been reading, then an extension of that would be that they go in your home and look at the books you have in your home and what you're reading in your home. And it seems to me that the library's dealings with its public ought to be privileged and that they should not be required at all to provide information which would show what individuals are reading. This association, through its executive board, will probably issue a statement to the libraries of the country, and this statement might tell them that this is an invasion of privacy. It is a method by which persons can perhaps fear to read if they know that that they're going to be examined or their name's going to be taken for that reason. Furthermore, I think the association will suggest that libraries resist these kinds of investigations and insist upon a subpoena being served before they go ahead with them.
These inquiries were made in connection with investigations of specific bombings of public or private facilities, or in preparation for getting information should it be desired in such investigations. Now, I understand that this is not an unfamiliar investigative technique on the part of law enforcement agencies. We certainly appreciate the public's interest in privacy and in the rights of privacy. On the other hand, there is a public interest, I think, in having us explore all available sources of information.
Last month, President Nixon went on television, all networks, to make a speech about the economy. Various Democratic leaders demanded equal television time to tell their side. Senate Leader Mansfield spoke on two networks saying what he thought. National Democratic Chairman Lawrence O'Brien spoke on one network saying what he thought and rebutting, he said, some of what the president said. Now the Republicans demand airtime for rebuttals to the rebuttals. The Republican chairman, Representative Rogers Morton, says O'Brien gave an unprecedented, inaccurate personal attack, and he threatened to sue unless he got airtime to say what he thought. And the networks were somewhat caught in the middle. In California, Frank Sinatra, always thought to be a Democrat, announced he was supporting Governor Reagan for re-election.
Decisions, decisions. Do I want a cigarette with a good, rich flavor, or one that's milder, smoother tasting?
Wait. Now one cigarette gives you both. Pall Mall Gold 100s.
They're longer, yet actually milder than many Filter Kings. Yes, they're longer than king size, yet milder, smoother tasting. Pall Gold. Pall Menthol, too. The longer, yet milder cigarette.
How would you describe the longer menthol? Pall Menthol 100.
Taste cooler.
Milder.
Cooler.
Milder.
The fact is, Pall Menthols are cooler and milder. They're longer, yet milder. Cooler tasting than many menthol kings.
How about that? A cooler menthol.
A milder smoke.
Pall Menthol. Longer.
Milder.
Cooler.
An appeals court in Washington ruled today that a 6% increase in airline fares ordered last year by the Civil Aeronautics Board was illegal because there were no public hearings. Prices rose sharply again today on the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrials gained more than 10.5 points, and the price of an average share went up 51 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share went up 13 cents. The Dow has gone up more than 23 points in the last two sessions.
Before the House voted today on the Cooper Church Amendment to stop the fighting in Cambodia, some of those supporting the amendment said they'd had threatening phone calls from the Nixon administration. Threats, they said, that if they voted for the amendment, federal money for various projects in their home districts would not be forthcoming. They told this in tones of outrage, but the fact is that is how Washington does business in both parties. A story that went around some time ago when some members of the Senate began objecting to Lyndon Johnson's escalating the war. Senator Church of Idaho, who opposed the war then and now, was then trying to get a federal dam built in his state. He made a speech one day against the war, quoting a column by Walter Lippmann, who was then writing against the war in his newspaper column. Shortly after, Church was at the White House, and President Johnson said to him, "If you like Walter Lippmann so much, ask Walter Lippmann to build you a dam." Good night, Chet.
Good night, David. And good night for NBC News.